another edition of the weekly daily fantasy football podcast covering week one on the IB Sports Podcast Network. Finally, we are back. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, my good buddy, the man with all the stats, Joe Matz. Joe, are you as excited as I am that football is back?
Oh, absolutely. This is, like, for me, it's the beginning of the NFL season and the first 2 days of March Madness. Those are, like, the biggest sporting holidays of the year by far.
Well, I would like to add the addendum of when Georgia wins a high-profile game, that's also classified as, like, a holiday. Go Dawgs. But for those that are listening for the first time, me and Joe, this is our second year of doing this podcast. We go through, and this is daily fantasy, we use DraftKings pricing, and we give you three guys at each position. We give you a high-tier guy, a medium-tier guy, and a low-tier guy. Because, I mean, what fun is it to tell everybody you need to play, you know, Patrick Mahomes and DeAndre Hopkins and, you know, just all the top guys. And we will give you some of those guys from time to time as an upper-tier player. But we also try to give you players to really, truly help you fill out your lineups. We had a great stretch down the last 6-7 weeks of the season last year. We're going to hope to continue that this season. But real quickly, before we get straight into the picks, I just want to remind everyone that the IB Sports Podcast Network is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. There is a litany of podcasts coming out on the IB Sports Podcast Network. Currently, we have the You Got a Minute Fam podcast with Alan and RC, the Team Turnbuckle podcast, the IB Sports Wrestling podcast. Me and Alan are going to get together and do a backdoor cover podcast probably tonight that we're going to go over each NFL division, give you the winners. We'll talk Super Bowl odds, MVP odds, and over-unders. So we really appreciate it. Again, if you'd subscribe to it, rate, review, and if you can, share. But, Joe, let's get right into this. We're going to start with quarterbacks. I actually didn't love any of the high-priced quarterbacks. So Jalen Hurts is my highest-tier guy that I'm taking at 6,400. This is solely just a combination of the Falcons still have major questions in their secondary and then Hurts' running ability, which we know that's why he's being projected as a quarterback one. Despite not really showing anything last year, he's going to be a great passing quarterback. But the other thing that makes him an intriguing play this week is in the preseason, the Falcons blitzed a lot. And their new D coordinator is known for blitzing. And what do we know about blitzing? Is that if you're a running quarterback, it's very likely that you will have opportunities to bust big run plays on those blitzes if you can make somebody miss or find that area. You know, let's say you're running back or the offensive line picks up the blitz from a side. And so I think that the fact that the Falcons offense is going to torch Philly, you're going to see I got Atlanta guys a lot in this. I think Atlanta is going to really seriously just smoke that Philly defense. So that's going to lead a lot of opportunities for garbage points for Hurts. And the fact that at 6,400, I just feel like his floor is going to be so high because of his rushing ability. We know week one can be tricky. It's sort of unpredictable, and it is nice to have a quarterback that he's probably going to run, you know, at least for 50 yards. He did it in every single game. I think he had a rushing touchdown, and I think it was 3 out of 4 starts. And that's why I think he's maybe the safest play in week one at quarterback, just because we know, again, that he's going to get some points, especially if you're like me and you think the Falcons are going to roll, which I do. So I got Jalen Hurts as my top-tier quarterback. Who you got?
I also wasn't totally taken in by those top guys. I did flirt with Kyler Murray. I think he's pretty good just because I think Tennessee, Arizona is going to be an all-out shootout. But I ended up going down to Brady at 6,700.
75-year-old Tom Brady just doing it again.
So, obviously this one will only count if you're doing a Thursday or Thursday through Sunday, Thursday through Monday type
you
lineup.
Better be. Come on, we've been waiting this long. You better be doing a Thursday.
Right, lineup. And honestly, I think there's a lot of value in this Tampa Bay-Dallas one. I think I have three guys from this game that I'm going to be hyping up here.
Two of the best offenses in the league, right?
Yeah, two of the best offenses, one of the best defenses. Right, so as long as it's only one, that there's usually points to be had. So Tom Brady, over the last 11 games, so after his second just, I don't know what happened in those first two New Orleans games. But after the second one, final 11 games, including the playoffs, Brady threw 30 touchdowns to 8 picks, 300 yards per game. He's got a healthy Evans, Godwin, Brown, Gronk, which, you know, I think Gronk
is incredible.
Right, that he's better than he was last year, which kind of makes sense because he's not coming off of a year in retirement.
Scary for opposing defenses.
And then, yeah, Antonio Brown's fully integrated into the team. They've got Giovanni Bernard, which doesn't sound
big. No, I think he's going to be big.
Doesn't sound like a huge deal, but then, you know, Brady loves his running backs, and no running backs drop more passes than the Bucs last year. So that'll help. All three starting Bucs receivers finished in the top 10 in receiving DVOA last year. That's a Football Outsider stat.
That is impressive. That's scary. I believe
PFF had them all graded 74.9 or higher. Dallas gave up 34 touchdowns to only 10 picks last year. Dan Quinn's probably an improvement as their defensive coordinator over Mike Nolan. But keep in mind, Dan Quinn's Falcons in the five games before he got fired, 299 yards passing or higher in all five games.
I just want to remind people that when he was great in Seattle, they had a litany of
two Hall of Famers, I would say.
Two unbelievable safeties, an unbelievable linebacker. Like, yeah. I think, you know, the players had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, if you don't have the right players for the system, it's going to be trouble. I think Trevon Diggs actually works out as a player they drafted last year who will fit into his system. But overall,
Micah Peters is going to help, or Parsons, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the linebacking core is actually pretty good. So I don't know that I'd be going Gronk this game. But PFF, their preseason rankings, Dallas, 31st ranked secondary. And even if you think that's low, it could be low by 5 spots or even 10 spots. And I love the Bucs in this game. So I think Tom Brady, he's got it figured out. And what limited action he saw in preseason, he looked unstoppable. So, yeah, Brady, 6,700 against
Week D.
He'll
be good until he's 1,000 years old. I co-sign on that. I think Brady's going to have a big year. He was somebody that I really came around to in season-long fantasy by the end of drafts because he's never going to get – it just seems like he's never going to, you know, deteriorate. And, again, I think the weapons are better than ever.
Peyton Manning is in the Hall of Fame now, and Tom Brady is still playing. Yeah.
Manning talked about it on a great interview with Bill Simmons that you should check out, just how great Brady is. And, you know, obviously I think Manning would still be doing it without the neck stuff. So,
yeah, it's possible.
The second tier guy is also from the Atlanta Eagles game. It's another guy that I'm really high on for season long as well. It's Matt Ryan for $6,000 versus Philly. I'm really high on Ryan and the Falcons offense this season, and it's such a huge upgrade. I cannot continue to preach this enough. Going from the offensive play calling the last few years and getting Arthur Smith, who is the head coach, so we're going to be running his offense. This is an offense that in many ways is very similar to Kyle Shanahan, and I don't need to remind everyone that Matt Ryan was the MVP the last season that he was with Kyle Shanahan as his offensive coordinator. I know people are worried about Julio, and this is not no disrespect. I'm as big of a Julio fan as anybody in the world, but Julio was injured a lot. His skills were starting to deteriorate a little bit. And again, Calvin Ridley is a stud. Cal Pitts, from all accounts, is a stud. They have guys like Russell Gage, Hayden Hurst. Mike Davis is a very serviceable running back. And the biggest thing I'm hearing coming out of Atlanta, and this is from local reporters, is the offensive line is going to be better this year, which was really bad last year.
Yeah.
And the Falcons were a team that people forget. Their offense was great last year. Honestly, they were just a really unlucky team, both in injuries, and they lost a lot of close games. And again, they had one of the worst coaches in the league in Dan Quinn, who was terrible, clock management, all that stuff. The Eagles secondary is trash. It was trash last year. I don't have the number that Joe just gave about the Cowboys, but I would be willing to bet that the Eagles are going to be low on that list as well, as they were one of the worst secondaries in the league last year. The Falcons being at home, you're going to see a lot of motion and stuff. I expect Ridley to eat. I expect Pitts to eat. Don't be surprised if Davis has a good game. And you sent me an interview with Matt Ryan that he did. I believe that was with Sports Illustrated. I'm telling you, I told you this off air that it sounded so much like what he was saying coming into the 2016 season when he went on to win MVP and their offense was as good as any offense has just about been in the last two decades. I am so high on this Falcons offense. Now, the defense, I don't know about, the overall. We'll see how that pans out. But with Arthur Smith, Ryan is still a very serviceable quarterback. And at $6,000, I think he is probably the most boom play for your money you're going to get this week.
Yeah, just because I do have all the preseason rankings up. Your two picks both work out. The Falcons, they had you guys dead last on DB in the secondary.
That doesn't make sense.
And the Eagles are 25th. So both of those secondaries, you
blitz,
can take advantage
baby, blitz,
of,
Atlanta.
For sure.
We need
it. I mean, yeah, I trust Dean Pease to get you guys to at least close to mediocrity. So we'll see. My mid-tier guy, this will probably be the guy, at least until we get to like tight ends defense, that I have the least amount to say, just because we don't have a lot of data, and it's because it's Trevor Lawrence. Against, he's at Houston, he's 6,200. I mean, it's simple. Trevor Lawrence, we all know he's good. He's got Marvin Jones, DJ Chark, Laviska Shenault. Texans have mediocre DBs at best.
James Robinson, too. That's a really good
one. Yeah, James Robinson's not bad out of the backfield.
Catching passes.
Texans, their pass defense didn't rank better than 24th in DVOA against any position last year. So they were
just
24th against
cornerback, too, right?
Yeah, they Bradley Roby would not have played because he's still suspended for one game. But they also, so looking into the future, they're even worse than we would have projected a week ago. Yeah, so 24th was their best ranking in DVOA against any position. So that's top two receivers, extra receiver, tight end, running back. That was their best. This was a bad defense. And the one thing I really worry about for the Jags, because I think, their talent is there. When they face good D-lines, it's going to be trouble because their offensive line is not good. We saw some of that in the preseason. The Texans don't have anyone who had more than 4 sacks last season. Last year, their top guy was J.J. Watt. He had 5 sacks. Gone. He's gone. They didn't bring in anyone who got more than 4 sacks last year. I mean, this defense is – the linebackers are solid, but otherwise it's a disaster of a defense, disaster of a roster. Give me Trevor Lawrence with his trio of wide receivers this week.
Yeah, they want that number one pick. My bargain guy is somebody that is another guy I really came on to late – in my research for fantasy football season long, and it's Sam Darnold versus his old team for $5,000. It's going to be seen whether or not he actually can really play, because I think some of these quarterbacks, they get in a bad position like he was with the Jets. We really don't know what Darnold is. There's no way to know what he is when he's been on that bad of a team with that bad of an offensive line. Well, now he has a chance to stick it to the franchise who drafted him week one, which that
I know, it's fun.
It's $5,000, which is practically nothing, so you could really build a lineup around him. The Jets were the 5th worst defense against the pass last year. They're pretty good against the run, but awful against the pass, giving over 275 yards per game. So I think that means that even with McCaffrey, they're going to try to pass the ball. That's where the success is going to be. McCaffrey can eat plenty, as we know, receiving the ball as well. And Darnold is now on an offense that has an elite back, 2 great receivers, one that he has chemistry with, playing with previously in Anderson. And I just think that Darnold is going to want to stick it to the Panthers. And I have a feeling that Jets fans are going to be furious. And if Zach Wilson doesn't play well in this game, which I actually think he will, they're going to be, just – poor Jets fans, just questioning everything because the guy that they drafted and then just, basically got rid of torches them for at least 2 or more touchdowns in the opener against this Fordham team. I think Carolina's going to be a sneaky offense all year, but I love seeing this week versus the Jets.
Yeah, well, I have one of their players coming up in a bit here, so I'm not fading that at all, especially, 5,000. And as much as I love the Jets coaching staff, and I think, they will eventually build up a defense there, that's going to be a year or two down the road.
Right.
So my lower tier guy, which should be a surprise to no one who listened to us at the start of last year, because we didn't get a lot of chances to use him later on. but it's Ryan Fitzmagic, 5,500 against the Chargers. The low tier savior is back. Last year, he started 7 games. In 5 of them, he threw multiple TDs, averaged 257 yards passing, and he only threw 2 picks combined in the 5 games. In his other 2 starts, he averaged 253 yards, so pretty close to the same, but threw 0 touchdowns and had 5 picks because he is Ryan Fitzpatrick. That he is the living roller coaster at QB. He's also, this won't surprise anyone, he's been in the top 5 in percentage of tight window throws. So that's throws where defenders in within 1 yard of the receiver. In each of the last 2 years, he's been top 5 in that metric. And while I think the key thing here is, yes, he's aggressive, and that might continue this year. But Tua ranked 6th last year. And I don't think anyone has watched Tua and thought, man, that guy's a gunslinger. So the reality is the receivers in Miami were not getting very open.
Oh, it's a huge upgrade in the weapons in Washington to the weapons in Miami.
Right. And there's a reason that Miami went all out on, let's get the fastest receivers we can this year to help Tua out. So, yeah, going from Devontae Parker, who all he did was win contested catches. Now you got Terry McLaurin, who's had no good QBs for 2 years and been super productive.
And just say Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, speed of Curtis Samuel, Logan Thomas, 2 good receiving backs. I mean, McKissick or Gibson, either one's out there. They're dangerous out on the backfield. So I love him with these weapons. Also, Fitz was 12th in EPA, so that's expected points added per play against zone defense the last 2 years. The Chargers are now run by Brandon Staley, who I love as a defensive coordinator, but keep in mind, no one ran more zone than the Rams last year. So it's the type of defense that Fitzpatrick's been having success the last couple years. He's upgraded all around, and he's only 5,500. So I think I'm honestly probably lower on the Chargers this year than a lot of people too. So I'm especially
feeling this pick. I think their defense is going to be good by the end of the season, but they had a lot of those star players were injured. They're coming on. I just think it's going to take time.
They're adjusting to a new
going. I agree.
System, yep. Yeah.
I think so, by the end of the year, they'll be a really good defense, but I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I think if you're going to jump on them early. Moving to running back, I know this is a cheat, but I don't care. I'm taking Alvin Kamara. We try not to do these kind of picks, but he's 8,600, which is actually a little bit lower than his normal value week to week.
He was hitting 9,000 last year consistently.
And I've been huge on Kamara before Murray was cut Tuesday. He's, in my opinion, the best back to have in fantasy for 2021. He has yet to be the primary Saints running back with a quarterback who can stretch the defense. You got to remember that Breeze was the quarterback, really, as Kamara began to become the number one back in New Orleans. And it was at a time that his body was just breaking down. It was not the Drew Breeze of old. And Drew was never somebody who could really stretch the field. Extremely accurate passer, but not somebody who has the ability to just take the top off a defense at any time. Now, you can say what you want about Jameis Winston. It's, you know, turning it over, and he's not as reliable. But Winston's got a cannon, and he definitely has the ability to push the ball down the field. More importantly, Peyton is an elite play caller, and it has been forgotten the last 2 seasons, this factor, because Breeze has limited their offense as his skills have diminished. I think that Peyton is going to remind everyone that, you know, I know people want to talk about McVay and Shanahan, but I am also one of these offensive geniuses, and I've kind of been, you know, basically playing with one arm tied behind my back, and now I have a quarterback who can make every throw. If Jameis's decision-making improves, the New Orleans Saints are going to be dangerous. I'm telling you, with Kamara, even without Thomas, the speedsters that they have at receivers, and I just think that this is going to be a huge season for Kamara because, again, if Winston is as, you know, effective as I think he can be at throwing the ball down the field, teams are not going to be able to stack the box like they had the last few years. The Vikings were stacking the box last year, and he ran for 6 touchdowns. So imagine what is going to happen if those lanes are open. Obviously, we know about Kamara's ability to catch passes. And again, Murray is gone. Murray ate so many touchdowns from Alvin Kamara. We do not have to worry about that. Yes, I know they will have a backup, but I do not see Smith immediately taking a majority of the goal line carries like Latavius Murray did for Kamara. For all these reasons, and the fact that I think Peyton is going to want to ease Jameis into that starting role, I see a heavy dose of Kamara early, particularly in week one versus Green Bay at 8,600. I know it's a lot, but I think he's a home run this week.
No, I'm with you all the way on that one. I think it's a good point that he's probably going to see more goal line action than he's been seeing in the last few years. And I would also imagine that when they get in the red zone, they might be a little more run heavy than they were in the past.
Because Winston's going to throw it to the other team.
Right, because Drew Brees, you don't need to stretch the field when you're inside the 20. You're just, he's going to make reading whatever defense, read is necessary.
Right.
Where Jameis, maybe.
He's going to have to earn that trust, right?
Especially right, early. Being with Sean Payton and getting the LASIK, maybe it makes a difference, but I don't think he suddenly becomes mistake-free. I'll let you go ahead and do your next one, too, because they were my favorite kind of above 6,000 running backs. So I just went like all mid and low tier on this one.
James Robinson at Houston, 6,400. The injury to Travis Etienne has made James Robinson, I think, the steal of drafts and season long. People forgot that this guy was basically a running back one last year. Now, Travis Etienne is such a talented running back and somebody that they took early enough. There was right for concern that how much is that going to eat into what Robinson does? Well, that's not a problem. Etienne is done for the year. And to reward Robinson for being, again, the workhorse in Jacksonville, he gets the worst run defense in football in 2020 for week one. The Texans gave up 160 yards per game on the ground. Robinson averaged 13.5 points per game last year versus the Texans, and that was without Trevor Lawrence as quarterback. As you said earlier, Lawrence is going to be able to open up running room for Robinson, and I would assume he will be a safety valve on passing plays for a young rookie quarterback. Him and Chenault will be that option. Robinson is going to only go up in his price this season in daily fantasy, and I think the 6,400 has a lot to do with the fact that they don't really know what to do with him with the Etienne injury and just, he was not projected to be that high. But I can almost promise you this will be the cheapest he is all season at 6,400 looking at the prices, because every workhorse is 6,500 or more. To get him $100 less than that and to have a matchup like this for week one, take advantage of it. Again, he averaged 5 pass attempts per game, 5 targets, and 18 carries. If he's getting 20 to 25 touches against this defense, it's going to be a good day. And I think Jacksonville's going to win this game. If they get up, it's more likely they just try to run out the clock, especially with a rookie quarterback. James Robinson is a steal at $6,400.
Yeah, I think I don't think that either of us have put any Jags wide receivers on our lists, but I mean, you can just pick the Jag you think is going to go off, because it's Houston. I'm sure, is
for me, wouldn't
recurring.
It be Chenault for a first game with Lawrence? Don't you think if I'm going to take a Jags receiver, I want to take the one that's going to be the easiest, target, which Chenault's going to be running over the middle. He's going to be a third down guy. Lawrence is a smart quarterback. I know he's got a big arm. He can make all the throws, but I just don't see him taking a bunch of big chances a game. They should win, and it's his first game in the NFL.
Right. This doesn't seem like the game where he's going to need to throw deep bombs to Jones Chark to try to win. And I'm sure Houston will be a recurring theme throughout this season.
We picked on him a lot late last year, and it really helped.
Absolutely did. So those were my top two guys above 6,000. I'm with you on both of them all the way. So I guess my second mid-tier guy then is Mostert against Detroit. He's 5,800.
Most undervalued guy going in drafts right now.
He's become kind of the forgotten guy with the rise of Trey Sermon. And, both of us fully believe in Trey Sermon long term, but I don't think, especially the first half of the season, I think Mostert's going to be
Shanahan
productive.
What has Shanahan always done, Joe? He always has multiple backs. Even in Atlanta, it was Freeman and Coleman. He's going to use multiple backs that are going to eat.
If he has the option, he wants multiple guys in there. And this is the most consistent running game. They just get, I think their like offensive line last year graded out as pretty mediocre in the run game, but he just schemes open big runs.
And boy, the place where they bring in Trey Lance, which they're going to platoon. Good luck.
And Mostert's a guy who takes advantage of it. For his career, he's averaged 5.6 yards per carry, which I think people just kind of forget how efficient he's been.
I didn't know how fast he was. He's like one of the fastest backs in the league.
I think when they've done those like miles per hour fastest ones, usually one of the guys in there. Last year, 5 yards per carry, and his 8 starts, he averaged 85 yards from scrimmage. He faces the Lions, who are 27th in rushing yards allowed last season, 27th in rushing DVOA defense, 29th in adjusted line yards. No one gave up more rushing touchdowns last year than the Lions. They gave up 27 on the ground. They're just a bad team, probably the worst team in the NFC. So I expect them to be losing, which just means even more runs for all of the 49ers running backs. So give me Raheem Mostert at 5,800.
And to your point, my low-tier guy is Trey Sermon. The other guy, he's 4,500. Anyone who has listened to our fantasy football preview shows knows I've been high on Sermon for 3 months. Like, honestly. Yeah,
he's been pounding the drum.
He's a stud. I think he's a perfect back for the Niners. His value did not go as high as I thought it would in season long, to where I think he was still worth it. And at 4,500, again, this is a team that gave up 134 yards per game on the ground. I think this game's going to get early. The Niners, you know, potentially give Sermon some extra carries because Mozart is the number one back. And again, I think that Mozart's value was just, it was insane how much he dropped. I picked him up in 2 leagues. But Sermon's going to get plenty of action this season. And against this pitiful Lions defense, I think he's the one that might benefit the most if the game gets out of hand early, because maybe they'll say, all right, we'll see what this guy can do. And also just think Shanahan's pissed. Like, last year was rough for him. There's been some articles talking about, well, he's only had really one good season. If you look at the talent that Shanahan's had in San Francisco when they're not injured, they've been great. What he did in Atlanta, I expect the Niners to be one of the best teams in football and try to send a message. And I think it starts with Week 1 with them trying to run up the score. That's going to be good for Mozart and Sermon. I don't even hate if you play both of them in a lineup, because that would be a very cheap backfield.
That's true. You just guarantee yourself all the rushing yards. Well, give or take whatever Lance does.
Right.
But but you will get the majority of rushing yards and rushing touchdowns in a game that I expect. I would assume they, a minimum, they're breaking 150. They're scoring like 2 on the ground.
Well, I think they're getting 200
I think that's,
on the ground.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. I think 150 is like, I'll be like, oh.
That's the floor.
They only got 152? Like, yeah. So I'm all in on the 49ers running backs. So I'll give you my other two guys I like, which, you know, talking about running backs who have the big opportunity now after an injury that people should not sleep on. Gus Edwards, 5,600 at Las Vegas. In his 3 seasons in the league, he's averaged at least 5 yards per carry every year. At least 700 rushing yards every year. And this year, I think he legit has a chance to maybe even double it, depending on how much they feed him, his career high.
Do you think he can handle a big workload? Because I think he's definitely a great play this week, early this season. Do you think? Okay, perfect. That's only, my only concern would be season long, but I'm with you that early on, this guy is, I mean, they're going to run. You have Lamar Jackson at quarterback. Only good things are going to happen if you're the running back.
He's not going to turn into Derrick Henry, but he's had 130 to like 145 carries each of the last 3 years.
Arguably more versatile than Dobbins, too.
Yeah, I think he's going to see at least 200 plus carries this season. And super efficient guy. Like I said, the yards per carry is good. 7th in rushing DVOA last year, 8th in success rate. He just gets it done. And the Raiders were 24th in rushing yards allowed last year. And only the Lions, who I just mentioned, gave up more rushing touchdowns than the Raiders. So great opportunity there. And that's another game. I expect Baltimore to get up. I expect them to pound it on the ground. And my lower tier guy is a guy that we've talked about a couple times last year. It's Chase Edmonds. He's at Tennessee. He's 4,600, which I haven't been the biggest Chase Edmonds guy in season long. I didn't get him in any of my leagues. I always felt like there were like 25 running backs I'd rather have. But at 4,600, he's the starter. Last year, he was only the 3rd down back, and he had 53 receptions.
I was going to say, his career, two years ago, if you remember, when he gets a bunch of touches, I mean, he has the ability to go off. Like, he had a couple of games in 2019 where he scored like 30 points or more.
Right, and I do think James Conner probably out-carries him on the year.
Well, until he gets hurt.
Exactly. But last year, Edmonds was only seeing 6 carries a game. There's no way it's that low again. It could easily be double that. And last year, 4.8 yards per attempt. Oh, last 2 years when he's had Kyler Murray instead of the worst offense alive his rookie year. And then in the six games in which he had at least 10 touches, 12.9 points per game, despite only scoring one touchdown in those six games. So if you're telling me the guy's floor is about 12.9 and I get him for 4,600, I'm feeling good about that. And to your point, though, if he really gets the ball and gets a couple touchdowns, we've seen him put up like 30 points.
So he can take any pass or any rush to the house from anywhere.
And again, I think that game is an all-out shootout, which again, that just
so do you like Connors too? Like, would you, you're not against Connors too this week or no?
See, I worry though, if it's Tennessee breaks out to the big league.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Then it's all Edmonds. So I think Edmonds is pretty safe. He's involved no matter what. Okay. James Connor could go either way.
That's a really good point. Moving on to the wide receivers, this is going to shock nobody that's listened to any of our preview podcasts. Calvin Ridley versus Philly, 7,900. I'm on record saying it. I'll keep saying it. If it doesn't work out, that's great. If it does, boy, I'm going to bang that drum. I think Ridley's going to be the number one receiver in football, fantasy football this year. He should thrive in Arthur Smith's offense. And even with the addition of Pitts, we saw what Ridley might look like in a non-Julio Falcons offense last season. Julio did not suit up in seven games last season. In those seven games, Ridley saw 11.2 targets per, 7.1 receptions, averaged 105 yards per game, and scored three touchdowns. I am shocked at the price of the top receivers overall for week one. Last season, the price for top receivers down the stretch was closer, like it was in that 8,000 to 9,000 range, with honestly most of the top guys being closer to $9,000. So to see Calvin Ridley at 7,900, Tyreek Hill at 8,200, I like building lineups this week with several top receivers and then the low price backs, which we've already given you a litany of them. But Ridley's going to feast week one. He's going to feast all season long. And again, I just think the Falcons are going to roll. And I promise you, much like Julio, when Julio was the unquestioned number one before Ridley became to Atlanta, Ryan has a favorite target and he goes to him early and often. Ridley has also not had the issues that Julio has, even with Julio being on the team scoring touchdowns. He's scored at least eight touchdowns in all three seasons. I think Ridley is going to have a huge first game, a huge season, be the number one wide receiver in football. And again, 7,900 at home against a bad secondary. Sign me up all day long.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do the double up, Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, I think you could do a lot worse. That is for sure. You and I, we're both buying, at least on the Falcons offense. We'll see what the defense does. I'm optimistic on
the defense is good. The Falcons are going to be sneaky good.
Yeah, I think Falcons legit wild card threat this season. And the driving force will obviously be Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley. My top wide receiver, like I said, I think Tennessee, Arizona is a shootout. I mean, if you throw in like A.J. Brown or Julio, I'm not going to blame you. But
right.
I think it's more of a question of which one goes off or if they both can.
What's the target share, as mentioned, C?
Less of a question for Arizona. DeAndre Hopkins is 7,800. I love that he's lower than 8,000. Like you said, there's some.
It's crazy how low these guys are.
There's some actual value in these high-end wide receivers this week. Hopkins, we know he's great. Ninth in yards per route run last season. Here's one of the key things. Cardinals averaged 9 yards per attempt on throws to him. 6.4 yards to the rest of the team. So it's over 2.5 yard difference on Kyler Murray.
I would be trying to throw it to Hopkins as much as possible.
Right, which makes sense. And Kyler Murray's not an idiot. Hopkins had at least 7 targets in every single game last year. He hit double digits 9 times, including the last 5 games of the season. He's going to see the ball. And I think you look at the Titans corners. Christian Fulton's in his second year. He struggled last year. We'll see what he does this year. But, I mean, they didn't feel so confident in him because we know that because they drafted a corner in the first round. And then Jack Rabbit, formerly Janoris, because I believe he's legally changed his name to Jack Rabbit.
I love it.
Jenkins. He's been a solid corner for years, but he's 32 and he's 5'10". So if it's a contested catch situation, I'll take the younger, bigger DeAndre Hopkins, who specializes in that. So I look at him. He's going to get fed. I think it's a shootout. Give me DeAndre Hopkins. I just absolutely love him this week. I do like Calvin Ridley more on the season. This week, I'm probably leading Hopkins, although I don't disagree with anything you said about Calvin Ridley. So,
yeah, Hopkins is another guy that, for whatever reason, his value in drafts dropped. I was really shocked. Like, this guy, remember, had 100 catch seasons and, you know, these unbelievable numbers with nobody's at quarterback. And Kyler Murray is a huge upgrade. And
if it's PPR, there's no reason to fade.
Exactly. He's going to get, I mean, like, he's going to get more targets. And Ridley's going to get more targets. Adams, he's, anyway, it just, cosign all that. The middle tier option, which is, I think, the guy that you want to talk about forgotten, Brandon Cooks versus Jacksonville, 5,300. I mean, I don't know what's happened. I understand that you have Tyrod Taylor, not Deshaun Watson, but he had over 1,000 yards and got 116 targets last year. And people are avoiding him like the plague in the drafts that I had this year. I took him in almost all of them. Thank you very much. And again, I guess it's because of the uncertainty at quarterback. But Cooks is the only guy left in Houston's receiving core. Fuller's gone. Cobb's gone. They just released Cote. Last year, Cooks had 9 games with 8 or more targets, 7 weeks with 6 or more receptions, and in the 6 games he had 9 or more targets, he averaged 113 yards per game. They are facing a Jags team that gave up 264 yards passing through the air last year. And the Texans stink, and we talked about they're probably going to be down, and Cobb is going to be the recipient of so many garbage time pass attempts this year. It's unbelievable. And again, Tyrod Taylor is not as bad as people want to make it. Like, he's got a decent arm. He is an NFL. I mean, it's not a good starting NFL quarterback, but he's serviceable. And again, we have to remind people every year, there is always a top 5, top 10 receiver who has a quarterback that you're like, what? Somebody's got to get the ball in these offenses. And when you have 3 so-so running backs, and that's being kind, and no other receivers, and your team's bad, that's really good for the number one most talented receiver, who is Brandon Cooks. I can't believe he's only 5,300 with this kind of matchup. There is not another receiver this week that is guaranteed to see the targets anywhere near this price at 5,300. Brandon Cooks is, in my opinion, a must start, and he's going to be most weeks until they figure out we need to, you know, move up his price.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Allen Robinson has made a living off of doing exactly what you just talked about. And I don't think Cooks is quite at his level, but it's only like one step below. He's a proven good receiver for the last half decade.
Yep.
So I'm with you. I was bummed that I'm blaming you primarily for why I didn't get him in the IBN league.
Gil Martin, who took him?
I'll have to go back and check, but it was like, I swear, I'm 90% sure it was like I picked, and I was like, I'll try to get one of these guys next round. Next 2 picks after me, Cooks, Corey Davis. It was just like, all right.
Sorry, Joe.
All right, so my mid-tier, like I said, love this game. Give me Godwin against Dallas, 6,200. First among Bucs receivers in yards per game, first in yards per target, and catch percentage. I mean, I think...
Is it confirmed it's just a nick in the injury? Because, you know, he did show up on the injury report.
Yeah, I've seen nothing that says he's, like, okay, questionable perfect. Legitimately for the game.
Yep, just wanted to make sure.
So, if he is, then as much as I hate him as a person, you should look very strongly at Antonio Brown. Because I think all 3 of these guys have a chance to go off. Like I said, though, I think Godwin.
I would go Godwin, AB, and then Evans week after week after week, unless you're just throwing a flyer, because Evans so inconsistent.
That's my general feeling too, especially because at least for now, both of the other guys are cheaper than Mike Evans as well. I think Godwin is the best at this point among those 3 guys. You could argue it, but like I said, he just ranked first in a number of key metrics. And I also like how he matches up on this defense. Again, Trayvon Diggs, I think I'm expecting improvement from him. I think he actually does fit this defense. He's a longer guy. I assume he's going to be matched up on Mike Evans pretty consistently. which means Godwin will see either Jordan Lewis when he's in the slot, or he'll see Anthony Brown on the outside. Last year, those two ranked 107th and 85th in PFF grade among corners. Dallas was 27th in yards allowed to number two wide receivers and dead last in DVOA against number twos. So, as much as I like
Chris Godwin.
Yeah, so I'm loving Chris Godwin. There will be weeks where Evans might be the better matchup and where Antonio Brown will make sense. But I think Godwin is, for me, the clear guy this week.
All right, so we share the low-tier guy. Yes. It's T. Higgins versus Minnesota, 4,700. He was honestly one of the more underrated rookies in 2020. This is mainly due to the fact of two things. He didn't play week one. He only played three snaps week 17. He only got 10 games with Joe Burrow before Burrow was injured. And he was averaging, before Burrow's injury, 14.7 points per game on 7.9 targets per. Burrow was on pace for a mind-boggling 770 pass attempts. I'm going to repeat that. A mind-boggling 770 pass attempts as a rookie. Despite playing with a below-average quarterback for 5 weeks, and again, practically not playing in two games, he still finished wide receiver number 28 for the year, catching 67 of his 108 targets for 908 yards and 8 touchdowns. And oh yeah, what do we always say, Joe? Rookie wide receivers normally don't pan out, and they normally make leap from year one to year two. So if this was his year one, I know a lot of people are worried about the addition of Ja'Marr Chase, and I think Ja'Marr Chase is a stud. He's going to be great, but there is no doubt early in this season, and honestly probably for a majority of it, Higgins is the number one receiver in Cincy. And with Burrow back and facing a Viking secondary that is eighth worst in the league versus pass last season at 258 yards per, you are getting the number one target on an offense that is going to throw as much as any team in the league versus a bad secondary at home. I think Higgins is arguably the best value for wide receiver number one at 4,700. Obviously, Cooks is going to probably get the most volume, but he's $600 more. That's $600 you can spend a lot of different places. And I don't necessarily think Cooks is going to do it, you know, necessarily better because, again, the quarterback disparity is pretty, you know, pretty big. And the receivers, you know, surrounding him to where I think Higgins is not going to get quite so much attention because there is other weapons in Cincinnati.
All right. I think you look at the volume Higgins got last year, too, and it wasn't overwhelming. He got good volume. Mm-hmm. But they were still throwing the ball to A.J. Green. And I think you replaced Ja'Marr Chase, or you replaced A.J. Green with Ja'Marr Chase. I think that means Higgins' volume probably stays about the same, and his efficiency just goes up.
And Burrow proved and in college, right? He can handle more than one stud receiver.
And, yeah, I just want to throw out the last four full games that he played with Burrow, Higgins last year, 24 receptions, 389 yards, 2 touchdowns. It's an average of over 16 points per game. And you're getting him at 4,700.
It's crazy.
And, you know, Minnesota, I expect their pass defense will be better than it was last year. It was really fucking bad last year, especially against number ones. They were 25th in yards allowed, 28th in DVOA. But Patrick Peterson, Bashaud Breeland, those are improvements. But Patrick Peterson's not the Patrick Peterson of a couple years ago. Like, there's a reason
the Cardinals let him go.
Not great corners. Yeah. So this is – Patrick Peterson's not good enough where I'm fading Higgins. I'm in 4,700. I will be surprised if I make a lineup that he's not in this week.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite all-around play. Tight ends, and we'll try to do this quickly. So Kyle Pitts versus Philly, 4,400. This is all about the price tag. Pitts is a freak. His new head coach has thrown to tight ends as much as any O coordinator in the NFL the last two seasons. Now he's got his own offense. They drafted this guy number four. He's going to end up being their number two target. I think it'll probably start week one. And again, they threw that much to tight ends without a guy anywhere near the skill set of Pitts. The Eagles have no one to cover him, like no one. And this is the last time you will get Kyle Pitts at this price. I'm going to go ahead and tell you, like, even if he goes, say, 5 for 50 yards and he gets 9 targets, he will be more than 4,400 next week. Pitts is, I think, going to break the mold of, you know, tight ends who typically don't do well their rookie season because of his volume. And also, I think he's just going to be a monster in the red zone. And again, at 4,400, you have a guy that probably is going to get at least 8 targets and you know is going to get looks in the red zone week one at tight end. It's the cheapest it's going to be all year. That's the only reason I'm going with Pitts as my number one tight end, is just the cost.
I mean, I think that's a good point, where if Pitts does show up early, that price will skyrocket because the hype's just going to go insane.
And I think so, it's the volume. I think they don't know the volume, but the thing is, as a Falcons fan, yeah, to read the stuff, I do know the volume. He's going to get, I promise you, 6 to 8 targets at a minimum. It could be 10, depending if the game's, you know, close.
So I'm going back to one of our wells here, my first tight end, which, and to be fair, you know, it's fine to go with the higher priced tight ends. Those guys are legit. But I went with Logan Thomas, 4,600 against the Chargers. Thomas saw at least 4 targets in all 17 games, including the playoffs. He played, and then 9 targets in 5 of them. He did this despite having 4 different QBs. So it didn't matter who was running the offense. They were going to look for Logan Thomas. And while his efficiency numbers were bad, that was largely because the first month of the season, which was mostly Dwayne Haskins, was just kind of a disaster. That's why I remember picking him and he'd do nothing because he'd catch 3.
We forgot, though, it was Haskins, right?
So from week 6 on, yeah, God, it was brutal. And then, of course, as soon as they got rid of him and I, like, didn't pick Logan Thomas, he went off.
We were hot and cold with Thomas.
But from week 6 on, Thomas got 72% of the passes thrown his way for 7.3 yards per target. Not an insane yards per target number, but keep in mind, his quarterbacks still sucked. They just were bad NFL quarterbacks instead of catastrophic. But you give that heavy of a volume, you give them an clear improvement at quarterback, and I think he's got a legit shot at being a top 5 tight end this year. The Chargers
are Fitzpatrick's best tight end he's ever had. Ever. Think about some of the tight ends he's had at Buffalo,
be true,
Miami.
Right? Gesicki was okay, but Thomas is better.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
I don't even remember who the tight end was in Buffalo.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm telling you, this is the best tight end he's ever had.
Yeah, so this is one of the rare ones where I don't think the Chargers are an exceptionally good matchup for tight ends. I don't think they're a bad matchup for tight ends. I just think Logan Thomas, 4,600, with the upside that he has now that he's got a legit quarterback, I really like it.
So we both have Tyler Higbee versus Chicago, 3,900. Higbee was a huge disappointment last season. Straight up, he came off an amazing 2019 campaign, especially down the stretch of that season. But there are 3 factors that I think this season, and particularly his week one matchup, will have you forgetting the blues of 2020 for Tyler Higbee. Number one, the upgrade to Stafford at quarterback, who we know likes to throw to his tight ends. And with the Akers injury, I could honestly see the Rams throwing 50 times a game. And I'm not kidding. Sean McVay's even said that they're going to throw. They're not going to be afraid to throw. They're going to mix in basically the run to keep you honest, but they're going to throw. Number two, Gerald Everett is in Seattle. Their target share last year was basically 50-50. If you're assuming Higbee gets just 80 to 90% of the targets, now we're talking about, you know, probably a top 5 targeted tight end in the league, and Higbee will probably feast off that. And then number 3, the Bears were awful against opposing tight ends last season. They were another one of those teams that the Bears and the Bills, like some of these run and passing defenses, remember, we got really good at just picking what tight end was playing the Bears and Bills down the stretch. All those reasons, Tyler Higbee to me is a great play at 3,900. I don't even hate him at a flex this week if you want to get real creative and try to load up on receivers or maybe add Kelsey and then play Higbee, you know, vice versa, tight end flex, et cetera.
Yeah, I know I read this off in one of our previous podcasts before the season, but in the last 2 years, the 5 times he played without Gerald Everett, 23.2 points per game in PPR. Like, he's shown the ability to be a legit, like, tight end one, like, up there with the elites if he gets volume. And the Bears aren't just bad against tight ends. They're really good against, at least they were last year, against number 1 and number 2 wide receivers. They were 6th in yards allowed to both 1 and 2 wide receivers. So if you're taking away Woods, you're taking away Kupp. You know, you can look at those other guys. Maybe Van Jefferson's a sneaky play this week, but also DeSean Jackson could be stealing those wide receiver 3s. snaps. So I think Higbee's the safest play for the Rams,
particularly in the red zone, right? Because that's the one thing Woods and Kupp are not great at is, you know, they're not great red zone receivers. And I could see Higbee, who, remember, Hockenson feasted on that too. Who's your low tier guy, Joe?
So get ready for the Sam Darnold to Dan Arnold connection.
I got to give you credit. You sent me the list. I did research. I love this play.
Yeah, I honestly almost missed him because he's so low. He's 2,600.
It's crazy.
Against the New York Jets. And most people probably don't even really know about Dan Arnold because he was on a team that rarely ever used their tight end, which was the Arizona Cardinals.
Freaking Cardinals.
So despite the Cardinals being the number one team in running four wideouts, he still put up 34 receptions, 438 yards. And he did that on really solid efficiency where, let me pull up the numbers here. Sixth in DVOA last year among tight ends, and then 15th in yards per route run. So he was putting up, like, efficiency wise, he was totally legit, like solid starting tight end. And he's only going for 2,600. Like you said, Sam Darnold probably wants to shred his old team. And the Jets gave up the most yards of anyone to tight ends last year. Now, I think C.J. Mosley, was he hurt or he opted out? So they might be better this year. But, you know, you are almost sure to improve when you're dead last. So I love the fact that it's a guy going up against a defense that struggled last year against tight ends. And he's $2,600. And from what I've read, it's been a solid connection. I know, like, I think one of the beat writers for Carolina even said, like, you got to watch out for this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, just real quickly before I get to mine, he's gotten a ton of positive reviews from local reporters about his training camp. They talked about a stock being on the rise before his last preseason games. He didn't play in the first two. And then he went out and caught all three of his targets for 25 yards.
There you go.
And basically a quarter and a half. So Darnold does have a connection with him. We know Darnold likes to throw to tight ends. It's a very interesting play. Mine, and again, I just want to get this out of the way. If this is a single-entry lineup, do not use it. But if you're doing one of these big lineups where you're trying to find a 1% guy, you know, somebody that could stem it and be the difference in you winning a lot of money, Pat Vermuth for the Pittsburgh Steelers at Buffalo for $2,500. He is being called Baby Gronk for a reason. And this is the reason I think that he is a decent play this week. He is a massive tight end. And I think he's going to play a lot immediately. And this is because, like with Gronk, they are saying he is a monstrous blocker. And what did we talk about on the preview podcast with, like, our concerns for Najee Harris, Big Ben, those receivers? The Steelers' offensive line is awful. So it would make sense if you have either this guy or a tight end that is a terrible blocker, which one are you going to play more, especially if you're throwing? And I think they're going to have to throw a lot because Buffalo is going to score points. I think we can all agree that. And maybe they want to go two tight ends because they're running Najee Harris. But either way, if he's on the field, he had two touchdowns in the second preseason game with Big Ben. They are saying that they have been wowed by him. Again, the beat reporters are talking about this guy is really good. He's you know, he's a huge target for Big Ben. Big Ben has always had a history of throwing to tight ends. And Buffalo was dead last year against tight ends. They were fucking atrocious. And because of that, I think that at 2,500, if you're in one of these big leagues and you're trying to find where's a cheap guy where I can put other money elsewhere and he might go off, Pat Vermuth is not a bad play. Real quickly, the flexes. I'll just go through them real quick because I know you have one, and then we're going to try to do these quickers this year. Travis Kelce, I don't have to go over everything. He's Travis Kelce. I just want to mention he had, and he's 8,300. He had 10 targets last playoff game against Cleveland last year, turned into 8 receptions for 110 yards, 1 touchdown, 27.9 points. He also scored 17 or more points in his last 3 openers. Miles Gaskins at New England, $6,000. He averaged last year 14 carries per game, 5 targets through the air. He's going to be a 3-down back this year. They talked about his pass blocking has improved immensely. That is why he's going to be a 3-down back. If Gaskins is on the field that much, it's going to be an increase in carries and receptions. New England always has trouble against these kind of shifty running backs, exactly like Gaskins. At $6,000, he's going to get at least 20 touches. 20 touches. If it's a competitive or leading game, that's good. If they're trailing, is their best receiving back. So that's going to be good for him too. And again, he should be pricing that 65 and higher range guys. Again, because the guys that are three down back is going to get most of the carries. He's 500 cheaper, so I don't hate that. And then my favorite guy is Corey Davis. He's with the Jets, 4,900. Coming off a career season in Tennessee, joins the Jets team where he's the unquestioned number one receiver to start the season on a team that should be down a lot and has a uber-talented rookie in Zach Wilson. Wilson's arm is tailor-made for Davis's skill set. And Davis may be my favorite play this week. I just want to, real quickly, in the final preseason game versus Green Bay, the Jets' starting offense played almost the entire first half. In that period, Davis had six targets, turning into four catches for 70 yards. That's great. Even better is Wilson threw it 11 times. So over half of his throws were to Davis. Again, beat writers are talking about him and Davis have this unbelievable connection. And, I mean, Corey, like, if you were going to build a quarterback in a lab that was going to make Corey Davis the best wide receiver possible, it is Zach Wilson. And again, they're going to be down. So I talked about how, you know, you're getting a guy who is the unquestioned number one receiver in Cooks. But unlike with Cooks, Wilson is an elite thrower and they can really make some big plays with Davis's speed. I expect Davis to get double-digit targets, and I'm honestly going to be shocked if he doesn't go over 100 yards. I love Corey Davis at that 4,900 price range.
Yeah, well, Corey Davis fan club, we're all in. My one guy, because I'm trying to, you know, listen to the boss and keep these a little bit shorter, hopefully.
We're doing okay.
Is CD Lamb, because like I said, love this Tampa Dallas game, and I can't only pick Dallas. I can't only pick Tampa guys if I'm saying it's going to be a high scoring game. CD Lamb's only 5,700, which, you know, I think we all remember CD Lamb was really good last year. But what people might have forgotten is how good he was with Amari Cooper, or not with Amari Cooper, with Dak Prescott, which is crazy because normally a guy comes on later in the season when he's a rookie. The five games, which includes the Giants game where Dak didn't even finish that game, CD, if we just prorate those five games to the entire season, he would have finished with 93 catches for almost 1,400 yards. Like, he would have been right what Justin Jefferson did. CD was going to do if Dak Prescott did not get hurt.
All you have to do is watch the Hard Knocks. I'm telling you,
Hard Knocks.
Do a montage. This kid's going to be just a freak if Dak plays.
Yeah, as good as Justin Jefferson was last year, if I'm placing bets on who turns out to be the best wide receiver from that class, I'm still picking CD Lamb.
I'm with you.
And the matchup's not bad. Tampa Bay, Jamel Dean's a really good corner. But otherwise, Carlton Davis, you can take advantage of. And Sean Murphy Bunting, you know, he made some clutch plays in that playoff run. He only graded out as a 60 last year on PFF. He was mediocre in the slot. When they go three wide, Lamb's in the slot. And when they don't, he's probably got Carlton Davis. Tampa Bay, 29th in yards allowed to number two wide receivers last year. And I think, generally speaking, defenses are still going to be treating Cooper as the number one.
Remember what Tyreek Hill did last year, right? A guy with kind of a similar skill set. Not saying that he is Tyreek Hill, but I'm just saying.
Right, if he had Tyreek's speed, it would be over.
But I think Lamb.
My Giants would never be the Cowboys again.
All year. I love CeeDee Lamb. He's one of my favorite plays this year.
Absolutely.
I think he was very undervalued. Defenses, again, we don't go into detail because it's defenses, but I like the Pats versus Miami, 3,900. Everything that is coming out of New England is that the Pats defense is legit. Now, obviously, Gilmore is the only question mark because they have to have a corner to make up, but their pass rush is supposed to be great. Their linebackers are going to be incredible. We're getting Hightower and those guys back. The Chargers at Washington, 3,100, you could convince me either of these defenses. I just, again, as much as I love Fitzpatrick, and I think he could have a great game, it could go the other way. And with the defense, I'm looking for turnovers. That's what I'm always looking for. Same thing with Tua. And then the Bills versus Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh's line is as bad as people have said, the Bills' front seven is nasty, and I think the Bills' defense could be that defense that takes a big leap last year. I think they had some circumstances, some injuries and stuff. And I could see that getting ugly. I mean, it may not. Pittsburgh could torch them, but I just, for 2,500, that is a matchup that could get really ugly. I don't think it'll be highly used either, which is obviously what you're always looking for. Those are my three defenses. What's yours, Joe?
Yeah, so I had a pretty simple strategy here, and it was pick good defenses against bad offensive lines. And so that led me to, I probably won't use this because they're the most expensive defense, but it's the Rams at 4,400 against Chicago. I just think if you remember back to the Super Bowl and what it looked like with Patrick Mahomes having to run around while Tampa Bay chased him down, I think it's going to be a similar dynamic, except instead of Patrick Mahomes, it'll be Andy Dalton. So I feel pretty good about that. I hate this because I'm actually going to this game, but this is probably my favorite play, which is Denver against the New York Giants at 3,300. I'm all in on this Denver defense. The way I feel about the Falcons offense, like coming back to being really good and surprising people with how good that team could be, I think that's what Denver is. But defensively, you add Surtain to the DBs. Von Miller's back. People forget he missed all of last season. And yeah, if you've paid any attention to the Giants at all, the offensive line is a pretty big problem. So give me Denver. And then, like you said, Bills, their D-line looks like they've added a bunch of young guys who sound like they're doing great. And against Big Ben, slow ass, and that offensive line, love that at 2,500.
All right. We're not going to plug anything at the end of the podcast because we almost made it in under an hour, but we are going to try to keep these a little bit shorter, but we also want to give as much information as possible because we feel like that's, you know, we're giving options that we feel like we're confident and have a great chance to succeed. And then obviously give our listeners the chance because they know what they're doing too, to just take that information, get it in one place and then make their own decisions.
They won more money on our picks than we did last year.
Absolutely. So, me and Joe are ecstatic to be back doing this. We hope for a huge season. Obviously, if you're listening to the podcast and you have lineups to do well using our lineups, let us know. We seriously love hearing about that stuff. It you know, the only thing better would be us winning a bunch of money, but I definitely am happy anytime our listeners do well playing our picks. So for Keith Fleming, Joe Matz, this is week one of the weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast on the Ivy Sports Podcast Network. We will see you guys next week. Hope your lineups do well.